Right, this week is Parshas Bishalach. What we're going to do is we're going to do a very quick thought at the very beginning related to Yosef's bones that Moshe took. Then we're going to follow a small theme that I kind of picked out of what the Netziv was, I don't want to call it henpecking, but because that sounds negative. What he was kind of pulling out of the lead-in to Kriyas Yamsuf and Kriyas Yamsuf itself, and I'll show you in the Psukim what kind of hints to his Mahalach, and then we'll look at the comments which he has, and then we're actually going to skip the rest of the Parsha and go to the Amalek section, which is the Torah reading on Purim Day, and it's the last nine Psukim of the Parsha. So that will be the bulk of our class, but it's actually really Parakut Zayin. The Parakut Zayin, mostly Amalek stuff, but also the lead into the Amalek stuff, which is actually connected. I'm sure some of you are familiar with the idea of how it's connected. Okay, so we're told at the beginning of the Parsha that at the time, Bishalach Paro es ha'am v'lo nacham Elohim derech haaretz p'shutim, when Paro sent the nation out, Hashem did not lead them in the direction of the Plishtim, etc., because he didn't want them to get afraid when they saw war. And then, in describing a little bit of their travels, it mentions of Vayikach Moshe es atzmos Yosef imo, that Moshe took Yosef's bones with him. So Yosef had his brothers swear that that at the time when Hashem redeems you, you're going to bring my bones up with you. Okay, so the Netziv talks about this and says, in other words, if you know when the timeline of when the Bnei Israel actually leave Egypt, so they left Egypt towards the end of chapter 12, and then you have chapter 13, which is the two paragraphs that we have in our tefillin. This is a continuation of chapter 13. But it's when they left Ramses that it should mention that Yosef's bones were taken. Why is it mentioning it now when they're already wandering in the desert? Shari lo haya arono shel Yosef omid besukos. It's not, here it says, vayisu me sukos. Vayachanu be'esam ikse midbar. So they took Yosef's bones and they traveled from Sukkos. That's not where Yosef's bones were. Now, we don't know where Yosef's bones were, but it seems pretty confident that it wasn't there. Because Sukkos was on the outskirts of, let's just say, the civilized part of Egypt. Yosef zachal l'gboros aviv, mi'ilanu gadam Yosef shlo nesasek bo, ela Moshe. So he says, Yosef had the merit of burying his father. And who is, and this goes to show, who's greater than Yosef? Who dealt with Yosef's burial? Moshe. V'lo od, or at least his the removal of his bones. V'lo od, Ela she'im Yaakov alu avdei paro zibnei beiso ve'im Yosef ala ha'aron ve'ashchina ve'akohanim ve'alviyim v'chol Yisrael shuva anei hakavod. So Yaakov was accompanied by avdei paro as and the elders of his household as a tribute to Yaakov. Yosef is accompanied by, well, look, what an amazing entourage. So what's all these? Why does Yosef merit to get all this wonderful stuff? Did they leave because of Yosef? Did all these things, or rather, all these things accompany Yosef because of who Yosef was, or did they accompany the Bnei Yisrael? Lo kulam avdu alu rather lechvodo shel Yaakov el harbei alu lechvodo shel Yosef. So Netziv says that when we learned of Yaakov's funeral procession, so we saw that a lot of those who accompanied Yaakov came out of respect for Yosef, right? And so here he says it's a similar kind of thing. So some of them had been commanded to accompany because Yosef said, "You're going to be the honored and the armed guard." But nevertheless, even though Yosef instructed people to come, it's all considered to be for the honor of Yaakov. Everything is thrown in with the mix of what's done to honor Yosef, even though it may not have been specifically in Yosef's honor. And that's why the bones of Yosef are actually mentioned at the time when they're leaving Egypt all good and proper. Because once they're no longer in Egypt proper, that's when the clouds kick in, and therefore, so it looks as if they're coming for the bones of Yosef. Now, I brought this more than just to show us that that these things are presented here as if they're in honor of Yosef, but to show you the comparison that can be made between the funeral of Yaakov and the removal of Yosef's bones, and theoretically what could have been the funeral of Yosef had Egypt actually paid attention to what took place back then. Now, the first time I actually noticed this idea was an Aleph Beta video, for those who are familiar with the work of Rabbi David Foreman, in which he, I think it may have been a Pesach Shir, in which he talks about the Exodus that could have been. And some of the parallels which he makes are really insightful. One which I'll mention to you now, even though, because I think everybody's familiar with it, but when Yaakov was brought up, so it says that they stop until at Goren Ha'atad, and the people of Canaan say, Evel Kaved Zeh L'Mitzrayim, that it's a heavy mourning for Egypt. And therefore they don't attack. And what happens, and we know this from the Az Yashir, right? Namogu kol Yoshvei Canaan. So the question is, what are the Yoshvei Canaan doing at the splitting of the sea? Where is the splitting of the sea taking place? I mean, it's not in Canaan. We know where Canaan is. By any argument that you're going to make, it's at least south of Canaan, depending on which sea you say that they're going through. And there are a lot of interesting theories about it, but we're not going to get into that now. But the idea is that Canaan watches the accompaniment of bones, and they see the sus and the rechev. If you see gam rechev, gam parashim, that the chariots and the horses that accompany Yaakov as an honor guard, instead, in this case, what do the chariots and horses do? They chase after the Bnei Israel. And that's a huge error that Egypt makes, that instead of accompanying Yosef and giving him the military and the royal funeral that he should have had, they gave chase and, well, we don't know exactly what they were trying to do, but they turned things around. So at least in the Netziv, throwing the comparison between Yaakov and Yosef, I like that, you know, that at least that sticky note that he's putting here, saying we've seen this before, and Yosef is being given credit for things which aren't really in his honor, but it's because maybe they are in his honor, just as it was for Yaakov. Okay, turn the page in the Chumash. We're on page 368 now. Okay, and here we are told Hashem tells Moshe in Pasuk Dalet that Paro is going to say that the Bnei Israel are lost, and so I'm going to strengthen Paro's heart. V'chizaktias leParo v'radach acharehem v'kavdo b'Paro v'chol chelo v'yadu b'tzraim ki ani Hashem v'yasuchein. So he says, I'm going to strengthen Paro's heart. He's going to chase after them. Now, who's God saying that to?
Moshe.
Right, it seems pretty clear, right? V'yamar Paro l'v'nei Yisrael nevuchim elam v'chizaktias leParo v'radach acharehem. Shouldn't it say v'radach acharechem? So that's, I'm just, you know, I'm curious about this in general. Even though it did say v'yadaber Hashem Moshe l'emor at the outset, but is that referring to all of this? V'radach acharechem should say that he's going to chase after you. And I will become honored with Paro, and they will know that I'm God. Okay, and Vayasuchain, what's Vayasuchain? Vayasuchain? Who's they? Who's the they that they did it? Okay, well, what? Oh, that's the, okay, so maybe it's on that. Okay, fine. So Vayasuchain and Israel. That's fascinating. The king of Egypt was told that they escaped. Barach means that they fled, right? Well, they already saw what happened. Who's the Am?
The people.
Who's the Am?
The people.
Why don't they say, Ma'azos asinu ki shilachnu es Yisrael mi'abdeinu?
Because they were the ones who were
Mi'avdeinu. Interesting. Okay, it's a little vague. I mean, Vayihi b'shalach paro es ha'am, right? So Paro sent out the am. That was the beginning of the parsha. But it's still kind of vague here. Not only that, Vayesor es rechbo v'es amo lakach imo. He took amo. What's amo? His own nation. So Paro also has an am. What is Vayefech levav paro v'avadav el ha'am?
Am Yisrael.
Is it? Is it? You can easily say it is Am Yisrael. That would make sense, right? That his attitude changed toward Ha'am. Well, who's the Am?
You do not.
So you're sure. Okay, you could be right.
Oh, it would have to be Israel.
It would have to be. It would have to be. It couldn't be that Paro and his servants turned toward his own nation and said, you know what? I'm going to make you guys do what I want to do because I need to fill in a huge void in my economy and society. Who are Paro's Avadav anyway? I'm just throwing a few questions out there because I'm...
Well, actually, Yosef bought them all on behalf of Paro.
All right, but that was hundreds of years ago. I mean, I'm not... or at least 150 years ago, whatever it may have been. The point that I'm just raising is that I... You know, when it says, V'esamo l'kachimo, that he took his nation with him, right, what does that mean? Did they come of their own accord? Did they want to come? Who is Amo? Is it referring to his soldiers? I mean, some of the commentaries say it's just referring to soldiers. Some of the commentaries say it's just referring to those who go on the horse and the chariot. Anyway, Pasuk Ches, Vayechazek Hashem
es lev. It was his whole army that he summoned.
Okay. All right. I'm not. I don't want to get into an argument about it. No. What I'm just trying to do is raise flags, because the pasuk. The fact is that the pasuk is vague. By Chazek Hashem Eslei Paro Melech Mitzrayim Vayidovach Rei Bnei Yisrael. So Hashem strengthens Paro's heart, and he chases after the Bnei Yisrael. The Bnei Yisrael Yotzim Miyarama. Now, if you look carefully, look at the next line. Look at the next pasuk, and this is where the Netziv comes with all this. Okay. Pasuk Zayin said, "Vayikach sheish minas rechav b'chur b'chol rechav Mitzrayim v'shol yishimal kulo." That describes the army, right? Pasuk Zayin. In the English, it says he took 600 elite chariots and all the chariots of Egypt with officers on them all. Okay, that's army. Yes. Then what does it say? "Vayirdefu Mitzrayim achrayim." Egypt chases after them. The Netziv says, "Hold on a second. Egypt. What's Egypt? Is that the army? We already saw the army." Okay, and look what it says. Paro hikriv. So that again describes the army. Paro comes closer. What's the next word? Mitzrayim. We've got two different sets of groups here, the Netziv argues. One is army, military. One is
spiritual.
No, that's not. Well, that's not the direction Netziv goes. Netziv says they were spectators. This was going to be a rout. This is something was going to happen, and people. You know, I just saw an article this week. Oh my God, this week. There was an article. I don't know how many of you heard of him. There's a French priest named Patrick. I don't remember how you pronounce his last name. Desbois, Desbois, something like that. He's a mamish tzaddik. Okay, what does he do? He goes around Eastern Europe, Russia, Poland, finding mass graves from shootings in Holocaust. He wrote a book called Holocaust by Bullets, and he just wrote a second book, like part two of Holocaust by Bullets. Apparently, somewhere between 2 and 3 million people were murdered by the Einsatzgruppen and the bullets before the Nazis figured out the concentration camps. Okay? Over 2 million people were killed. You've heard of some of them, Ponari, you've heard of Babi Yar. They were all over the place. So I just saw an article where somebody was making the argument that you know, close to half of the victims of the Holocaust were killed in this way, and because of all the attention given to the camps, these people are kind of like, what an insult to them. Which is a compelling argument. Why do I mention it? Because when I read Desbois's book, Holocaust by Bullets, what I discovered, and I just saw this in the article about his new book as well, that when they did these killings, the townspeople were all there. They're watching. Oh, you're going to kill the Jews. That's cool. We're going to watch.
It was their entertainment.
Correct. And so, Lahavdil, this is why Mitzrayim is giving chase. Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, the civilian population. That's the argument that the Nitziv makes. And I'm going to just show it to you through his comments here. Okay? I mean, some of these comments might mention something else, but I just want to go through as quickly as we can these next two pages, because you'll see the common theme. So we're not going to be going back and forth to the psukim, but I just wanted you to know that. I'm in the middle of page 1, where it says Perek Yidal Pasuk Ches. According to the order of the psukim, it should have said Vayechazik Hashem Yachidach Vayesoris Rikvo, that Hashem is going to strengthen, but Hashem strengthened, and then afterwards he saddled up his chariot, etc. But first Paro became stubborn on his own because he heard that they had run away. Again, it doesn't make any sense. He had sent them. So naturally, he had to strengthen his own heart. In other words, he had to give himself his own resolve. He had to pump himself up to say, I'm going to do this. So the strengthening of his heart is that when he caught up to the Bnei Israel, and he saw, maybe I really shouldn't be doing this, because there's fire, and there's pillars of clouds, and he's like, you know what, maybe not a good idea. No, I'm going to go ahead with it. So that's Vayechazek Hashem, after he saddled up his chariot. They are going out with the mighty hand. Says they weren't going so fast. Now, according to the Nitziv, therefore, the Kriya Samsuf takes place really, really close to Egypt because they did not travel far at all. Look what it says. Hamon Mitzrayim. What is Hamon Mitzrayim? The population, right? That's the civilian population. They're following Paro and Chelo. Why? And his army, why? When they realized that Israel is not going to be returning, which they never had anticipated. Remember, they had given the Israelites, assuming a 3-day journey, gold, silver. So now, the Nitziv does not go into detail whether these people were expecting a military, an annihilation. But maybe they were concerned that if the military is going to annihilate them, then the military is going to... They're gonna take everything. This is my stuff. I want to go get my stuff.
But they did that also where the people came out to see and the Civil War.
Ufaro hikriv. Paro hikriv li Yisrael. Chosman shei paro rachog Mitzrayim achorehem v'lo roi shel amon rabo shel Mitzrayim. So he says Paro comes close first. Okay, nobody can see Mitzrayim following behind because. And by the way, according to the Nitziv, clearly they're not too far away from Egypt, because otherwise, how are all of these Egyptians coming? How are the Egyptians?
Transportation.
Right, there isn't transportation. As a matter of fact, some of the commentaries go into great detail trying to figure out where on earth Paro got all these horses from, because didn't the horses all die? Right. So maybe anyway. I don't want to look at that. So they hadn't seen all of Egypt. The Bnei Yisrael were not afraid of the army of Paro, believe it or not. But right? How many soldiers does Paro in fact have? Okay, now listen, I'm not belittling the number of 600 chariots. Okay, that's a pretty frightening thing. But in the end of the day, when you have huge numbers like the Bnei Yisrael had against that, so yeah, some people will die, but in the end, are they going to be so victorious? However, they didn't see all of Egypt. Says when they saw Egypt behind them, they said, "Hold on, we don't have the numbers anymore, because now it's the entire country, nation of Egypt, against all of us." So yeah, maybe we can knock down. Maybe we can knock out a few chariots by throwing a spear into the spokes, but to get everybody against everybody, that's really frightening. V'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. V'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. V'asher ad kol lo nadal Mitzrayim al-yadei ha-makos ki l'faro v'avadov shero eich bo ha-makos v'eich ha-lochu. Says, now, v'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. Now, I have a small question with, because, we knew in Egypt with the plagues that the goal became Laman Teda or Laman Tedu, you know, Viyadu Mitzrayim, that they'll know who Hashem is. So here he's saying, Viyadu Mitzrayim Keni Hashem. I mean, that's the pasuk that I always have in my mind, but that, I guess it's because I'm just familiar with it from this parsha. That because the everyman Egyptian did not see, how the plagues came about. Because how were the plagues started? Well, they were either started in front of Paro, which in any case, it's not like it's a huge spectacle, even if there were a few people who saw it, or it was done in front of nobody. So how would anybody know that this came from, you know, whatever it was that Moshe was doing, and from Moshe's God? Instead, you know, maybe they saw that the Israelites were not affected, but maybe it's the Egyptian gods that are making this happen. Maybe it's Paro's magicians that are making this happen. Who knows? Who knows? So here, he's saying that that they're all now going to know who God is through watching what takes place over here. V'kavadi b'faro, do you want to go in? V'kavadi b'faro, v'hinei b'emes haya neis kriyas yamsuf atzalas Yisrael rabba me'od me'ashavas amayim. So now look at what he says here. He says that the miracle of the kriyas yamsuf and the saving of Israel was much greater than the water going back down. Okay, in other words, it's the salvation which was great, not the idea of the water going back down. Why? Because water going down, we have a word for that. Gravity, right? Gravity, nature, okay? That's an easy one. Of course they're going to go back to the way they were. Okay, so we talk about the splitting of the sea. When does Egypt figure out that there's a miracle going on here? When they look at it and say, "Oh no, oh no," or oh, Israel's God," whatever it is. Okay. When they see these walls are standing, and then they go in, and other people went in there safely, and then all of a sudden the water starts tumbling down, if water does in fact tumble, then that's when they realize. Or that's when they will realize. Pasuk of Gimel. V'yirdifu Mitzrayim v'yavo achrayem, I'm on page 2. Hainu kol Mitzrayim alchu achrayem. Okay, that's the theme that I did a lot of editing to bring you, you know, these particular pieces. But you see that he's saying that all of Egypt is coming after them. Aval rak kolsus paro el tochayam. Okay, so in other words, the Egyptians chased and ran, but they didn't get stuck in the sea in the same way as the army did. Rak hema nechnesu kulam l'makom abakiyah v'lo kol Mitzrayim. El kamayam nechnesu v'kama od lo yigiyu l'kanes. Right, so I mean, just think about the multitude. If the whole point was kolsus v'rechef Paro, right? That the Paro's chariots are going to be drowning in the water. So that's the goal. The goal is to get those for their wheels to fall off, for them to get stuck in the mud, etc. But not for all of Egypt to follow in there. So the Netziv clearly does not believe that all of the Egyptians were drowned in there, but that a number of them may have been beyond, of course, just the army. Le'eis hano ena perish l'tokfo kasher haya perish Rashi. The tukfo. What does tukfo mean? For its purpose. Okay. Shari b'samach k'siv orapam v'yeshuva mayim v'yechasu el aperish le'esano. Le'esano means to the way that it was before. V'kach aperish le'tukfo detanya b'mechilta l'magam ikra mayim shu'ayam b'milo'o. That the water returns to the seabed. U'cheteva chelik shenifra min haklal. Shushav sura siba mfaredes el mikoro. So you have to imagine, you know, when you watch the movie, you get an image of how Kriyas Yamsuf happens. But the Torah describes how Kriyas Yamsuf happens. It says that there was a wind all night and it's pushing the water aside. So now if I do this, I don't know how well you'll be able to see. Well, I can't sustain the wind very long. I'm not the Rabbanu Shlom of any stretch of the imagination. But you can see that it does part the water when you do that. And the point is that the wind was strong enough to keep the water separated. So, but where is that water going? The answer is that the water has to be going up in some way to allow for the water to not go over onto the side where the Bnei Yisrael either were coming from or are going to, but obviously the water has to go somewhere. So it must go. I mean, maybe you could push back the sea a little bit. I guess that's possible as well, without having it go over the embankment. Well, yeah, but what's a wall? Meaning, if let's say the water is this high, right? Let's say the water is this high. This is normally the height of the water. Okay. So now, I'm gonna see what I just did. No, whatever. Okay, that was the height. That's where I had it before. So all the water that's on this side would be just, you know, it could be, I don't know what the exact water word is, like displacement, I think it is. It could be pushed back. So you have a panel here, or however many, you know, tunnels you had. But the point being that the wind is blowing through here, and so you have a wall. It doesn't mean that the wall is woo all the way up there. I know that's the way they do it in the movie, but it could be just as high as the water was. Right? Why does it have to be? Why does it have to be something, you know, more fancy than that? Okay. Anyway, Avladayin lo shavu amayim kiim laat laat. So he says, when the water started going, it only started going back a little bit. And that's how we get the idea that Mitzrayim starts to get stuck in the water. Hamona am shalchu beregel naru behem. What is it? Naru. Does it mean to get shaken up? To get shaken up in there? Aval arechev v'haporashim adayin lo nishtefu. They hadn't yet drowned. Kiderach susim lashut betuv al pnei amayim. Horses are decent swimmers. The horses are able to continue. V'gam kama me'amon Mitzrayim shayusmuchim la'yabashim nitzolu be'emes b'mashas shatu al mayim b'chazara. Right, and those who were closest to the seashore were able to be saved because they too were able to swim in the water that was higher up. Okay, vayeshuvu amayim. And so now you got to look at the pasuk because it says v'gomer. You know, everybody know what the difference is between v'chule and v'gomer. Everyone know? V'chule means I gave you all the part of the pasuk that you need for the quotation. The gomer means, look up the rest of the pasuk, I'm too lazy to print it for you. Okay? Vayeshuvu hamayim vayechasu. Is that what we're up to?
Pasuk
chavchas. Pasuk chavchas, right? Okay, let's take a look. Quick look. Vayeshuvu hamayim. Okay? Vayeshuvu hamayim, the water went back, vayechasu es harechev, and it covered up the rechev and the parashim. V'chol chel parah bo'im acharayim bayam, lo nashar bohem arachat. That there is none left of the Rechev, Parashim, and Chel Paro.
People.
Okay? The army. Look at the previous pasuk. Vayina Er Hashem is Mitzrayim B'tzochayam. That Mitzrayim was churned about. Right? That's the way art school translates Vayina Er. So what do you have? You have people being thrown around, but not drowning. But now it's the Rechev and the Parashim who got stuck in the mud at the bottom of the seabed. That's who drowned. Az Nishku Kulam, he says. So now we get to the psukim that we're familiar with from the davening. Don't say that they saw them already dead, because that would make the pasuk extra. Because if they're already dead, they're already dead. So it's understood that after they drowned, they died. So what's it telling us and telling us that they saw? Elaperush mace shalchim lemisa. When it says Vayar Yisrael Sitzrayim mace al svasayam, it means that they are seeing people dying. Verosh and meparperim v'kamim mina misos, and they're seeing that they're actually expiring in a whole bunch of different ways. V'kach mevor mechilta mace misos meshunos misos chamuros zomazo. That each one is dying in a different way. I mean, I don't know. It seems to me that they're all drowning, but I don't know that each miso meshuna. But anyway, Mishum Hachik Ksiv Yisrael below Bnei Yisrael. So what does it say? Vayar Yisrael as Mitzrayim Meisal Sfasayam. What's the point? What's the difference between Yisrael and Bnei Yisrael? Mishum Shehema Agdolim Shebi Yisrael is Bonu Al Hashgachas Al Hashgacha Mi Meis B'Zeh Ofan Mi Meis B'Zeh Ofan. Right, so it says that Yisrael, it doesn't mean all of Yisrael. It means some people of Yisrael as opposed to everybody. who were able to discern who was getting the worst kind of death. I mean, I don't know what the positivity or what we're supposed to take from this is, but he continues and says, "Mizeg Yasher, Yar Yisrael, Seir Gadol Asher Asa Hashem b'Mitzrayim v'Yireuha Amis Hashem." That Yisrael saw the mighty hand that Hashem held against Egypt, and the people were fearing God. Eav Shalafari Shiroa Nation Asa. You can't explain this to mean that they saw the miracle that was done. The imken yoter hayaro ilomar asher asa Hashem li Yisrael. Right? It says vayayisrael gadol asher asa Hashem b'Mitzrayim. It should not. It's you don't want to say that this means that they saw the miracle that was done, because then it should refer to what Hashem did for Israel. Sharei ikar aneis hayat salis Yisrael v'lo tvias Mitzrayim. Right? The main miracle here is, as he said earlier, the saving of Israel, but not the drowning. The drowning of Egypt was really no big whoop in the scheme of things. Why is there fear attached to this, what they're seeing? Vayar Yisrael means, and Israel saw. And at the end it says, Vayireu, which means, and they feared. Is it because they were saved in this miracle that they fear God? Why is Kriyas Yamsuf a bigger deal than the fact that they actually left Egypt? So what is it that's going on here? It's like we know about from the Haggadah. There's 50 or 200 makos here. And they get that from the idea of the yad. Yad is 10 times the etzba elokim. 5 times, rather, the etzba elokim. V'lecha'ora temua, v'arekol...
Kamapamim.
What?
Kamapamim.
Kamapamim, sorry, you're correct. Kamapamim siv yad chazakah v'loni drash ma'uma. We don't make a big drash out of yad chazakah. So he says the main reason for the drasha is because the Am feared God. That we see from the way, again, he's basing on the way he described it before, of those who died, dying with a Misa Mishuna, each one getting their own individual punishment because of the way they treated Israel. That their pursuers and their enemies drowned in the depths. Hainu chela malucha nikru rod fehem. Those who are pursuing them, that's the army. Shalom misina asu el ba'avodas malucha. So they're not called sonim. Why did they? I mean, I'm not excusing the actions of Nazis. But you know, what was always their excuse? We were following orders. Okay, I'll give that more to the Wehrmacht. Okay, who were fighting for Germany. Some of whom may have been Nazis, but some were not Nazis. Were actually anti-Nazi. But in any case, but what would they say? We're following orders. So they're not necessarily enemies. They are rodfim. They're pursuers. Aval sharamo mitzrayim mechunim sonehem. But the rest of Egypt, again, getting back to that theme, Egyptian civilians are there. They want to see Israel die. Those people are enemies. Umishin eschayiv al pirisho nitba v'gameis b'ashkacha b'misa ruyi loncho. So whoever was chayiv to die on account of his own, you know, riches. So that's what happened. And so through that, people learn who God is. So now, what's he saying? Who's the Am? It could, right? Isn't that fascinating? It's probably referring to Bnei Israel. I mean, the pasuk, you know, Egypt is dead. But anyway.
That's right.
I don't know that that's the case. We have plenty of archaeological evidence that there is a nation of Egypt, you know, after the time that Israel leaves Egypt. No, but that's the army. So he's saying that not all of the Egyptians died. That, I mean, that's what we saw before. So up until now, people thought that maybe Moshe is this great magician. When they saw that each Egyptian had gotten whatever was his due, and they're able to discern the difference between this one who died quickly and this one who didn't die quickly and this one, then haminu ki ach yad Hashem hu Moshe hu avdo v'lo osa midat v'chas v'shalom. So they saw that there's the hand of God here, and it's not Moshe, because how's Moshe knows which guy was worse in whichever way. Okay, so the main point that I wanted to show you, and I think I emphasized it enough, is the Netziv's approach, that it's more than just the army that's there, but that Egypt itself, the people of Egypt, followed as well. Okay, so now with that, we're going to skip now to the end. As I mentioned at the outset, we're going to go to the end of the parsha. Page 388, chapter 17, where we have...
Can we ask a question?
Sure.
How the 2 or 3 million Israelites, not each one of them knew all the other Egyptians and the evil...
So I don't know how to answer that. The only thing I can say is that he through saying, Vayar Yisrael, Sayyid Agdallah, he's saying that it's only a few, only the deserving few who could understand that discerning. So they didn't have to know so and so. It's like they can see on their face, you know, their evil meter, right? Which this guy deserving of, you know, he's half evil. This one is totally evil. This one only a little evil, and therefore each one gets according to their just deserts. Yeah. Okay, we move on. Parakut Zayin. So Parakut Zayin starts with the complaints for water. So, and I apologize, I just did not have the time to go through Mara and Mun. There's a lot on all that stuff, as well as a lot on Azyashir. But I actually started this week going backwards in my preparation. So I began by looking at this stuff and found it compelling enough. Okay, so the people complained to Moshe in Rephidim, because there's no water. And this is not the same complaint as in Mara, where there was water, but there was a bitterness, either of the water or of the people, and somehow that was resolved with the eights that Moshe put into the water. So here the people, they fight with Moshe. Vayar v'ami Moshe, Pasuk Beis, on page 390, give us water. Pasuk Gimel, Vayitzma Hashem l'am l'mayim, Vayolen l'am l'Moshe, they're complaining, and they say, and he says, Lama, I'm sorry, they, meaning the Bnei Yisrael, or at least those who are complaining, say, "Vayomer lama zeh halisanu mimitzrayim lihamis osivias b'nai b'nai batzama." Why did you take me up from Egypt so that I will die and my children and my animals? Okay. What happens when the people actually drink? Look at pasuk vav. Hinani omeid lefanecha shama latzur. I'm going to be standing at the rock. V'hikitsa batzur. You're going to strike the rock. V'yatsumi menamayim v'shasa am. And the people will drink when the water comes out. V'yaz kein Moshe le'enei zignei Yisrael. And Moshe did it in front of the eyes of the elders of Israel. Okay, so what does that mean? Who drinks? Ha'am. What about the children? What about the animals? Or maybe the children are included in the nation. All right, we're going to get to that. Hopefully we'll get to all this. Lama zeh halisanu mimitzrayim. Let me see. The Netziv says, Lo amru hotei sanu mimitzrayim, ki loshon atluna le'el yudalid, yudalif. Right before the splitting of the sea, they say, why'd you take us out of Egypt? Here they're saying, why'd you take us up from Egypt? Because they're not asking why'd you take us out. They knew why we were taken out. But what's their complaint now? The third line now. Their complaint against Moshe is that it's on his account that things are happening against nature. because that's the way things are. So people who say, no, in order to get things above nature, I have to be a better behaved person. Otherwise, I'm not deserving. So I'm missing, you know, for certain needs, and that's going to cause me to die. What are we talking about? I mean, maybe it's referring to the mun, maybe it's referring to water, but the idea that the people are living in the supernatural existence, for people who are not on that level or who feel unworthy of it, it's something which is going to drive them nuts. And in fact, that happens later on in the Torah. Remember when they say, "V'nafshenu katsa milecha maklokah," like we're sick and tired of this bread, we don't even know what happens to it after we eat it. U'mishimachi hechelu b'lashon rabim he'elisanu. Why'd you bring us all up? Why'd you bring all of us up and you're going to kill me? So in other words, the word Elisanu doesn't mean that you took us up from Egypt. It means that you took us up levels of holiness, levels of miraculous living. And that's their complaint now, because they need water in a natural way. They need water in a way that they can understand. But what's going to end up happening? Where's the water going to come from? From a be'er. And that's going to be the exact opposite of what they're asking for. Be'alisanu. Okay? Well, you know, that's part of what it means to live in this kind of existence. Be'as b'nai, be'as m'knai. Be'emez lo ayu abonu ve'amiknet semeim, kasher yivu abasamuch. We're going to see that the children and the animals were not thirsty. El k'dei l'hagdil atluna. Why are they doing that? You know, it's like people say, it's like when you have a mob of one or two, right? It's, everybody's saying that you are, you know, that we have, everybody's say, you know, when people do that, they exaggerate and they'll throw everybody into their own camp. So he says, that's what they were doing here, and saying that my children and my animals, they're exaggerating the complaint. Or they're going to throw in their children, because if they would just say about themselves, you know, we're really thirsty, Moshe would be like, and your children are fine, right? Your children are fine. Grow up, guys. It would be clear that the reason why they're thirsty is because of some sin. So that's why they're saying that they too are. So what would be the sin that is coming here? I don't remember. I mean, the sin that comes afterwards. Well, the sin here is the complaining, which gets into the why a mullet comes. Okay, anyway, now, the next thing, which I put in italics, I'm not going to read inside. We did touch upon this in the past couple weeks, probably more in Va'era than in last week. But you'll notice that Hashem tells Moshe, "Umatecha asher ikisa bo es ha'yor kach mi'archav yalachtem pasakei." He says that with the staff that you struck the yor, you have to take it in your hand and go. So the Netziv, who hemmed and hawed, and I really was not pleased with, even though he mentioned a bunch of different things, but he didn't really seem to come to a particular conclusion on his own. But here he says, look, I did mention that Moshe had something to do with the striking of the river back in Makas Dam, even though everybody knows that Moshe gave his stick to Aaron, and that maybe it's Aaron's stick, or maybe it's Moshe's stick that is referred to, but it, because Aaron did it, it's as if Moshe did it. Yeah. He goes back and forth here on that. I shared it with you because I view this pasuk as proof that Moshe did do the makkah of the blood. What?
The first thing also.
No, the pasuk says that Aaron did Sfardeya and Kinim. But in Dam, it's much more clear that Moshe is involved, at least insofar as how you read the psukim. If you don't try to finagle to say that Aaron did all of it. Okay, but Sfardeya and Kinim, it says that Aaron did it. Okay, anyway, Vishasa Am. So the people, will drink. Hashem did not say that they and their children and their animals. So Hashem did not say you're going to be giving to your children and to your animals, as was the case in Parshas Chukas. Usavoam.
That they asked for evil and the evil came.
Oh, okay, it came with them. Right. So, right. But in other words, the point is that they were the ones who were thirsty, And there is no credit given to the idea that their children or animals got water here. It was only the people who were the complainers, the ones who were challenging God, I suppose, who were who became thirsty and lost out. Now, what happens as a result of all this, if you look at the very end of this little paragraph in the Psukim, it says that this place is called Masa Meriva, Al Riv Bnei Yisrael, right, for the fight of the Bnei Yisrael, Bial Naso Summon, for their testing God, Lemor, Ayesh Hashem B'Kirbenu Amai, asking, is Hashem among us or not? So, Ayesh Hashem B'Kirbenu Amai, Hadavar Pele, the Nitziv says, that's crazy, Ech Nistapku, how could they even have any smidgen of a doubt? Acharei Ro'ah, Mamud Eish V'ana, Ne'or Arbe Nisim, after they saw the pillar of fire and the pillar of clouds and all their miracles, that everybody knows that the only way this stuff could happen is God. And it already told us that they believe in God at the splitting of the sea. So there are two things you need to know. One, they knew very well that God is among them and doing miracles. They assume, of course, God's with there as long as Moshe's around. But if something would ever happen to Moshe, it's not always the case that Moshe's going to be there. That we need to know that even without open miracles, that God's with us. That was their doubt. Is God with us even if Moshe were to be gone? Is he watching over us in the natural order? And because of this doubt, the war with Amalek was upon them. Maybe God can see us on the outside, but how does God know if we're thirsty or whatever it is that's going on inside our body? Something here, Baraba. They're asking, is Hashem within us? And these two ways of understanding, is Hashem with us, they're dependent on one another. So, if God knows what's going on with each person, then he can fix it. Even if the person is not worthy. And so, that is the setup for the war, for what's about to take place with Amalek. Okay, turn over the page. We get up to page 4. By Avo Amalek. Okay, it's Pasachet. Amalek comes and they fight with Yisrael in Refidim. Okay? Now, the Nitziv starts off. Go to the end of the first line there. Amnam Lashon Vayavo Amalek Miutar. Since the idea that Amalek came is extra. Right? In other words, if they're fighting with Israel, obviously they have to show up. What's missing if it just said that Amalek picked a battle with Israel? Right? It doesn't have to tell us that the Kanani showed up. Obviously, if he's going to fight with Israel, he had to have shown up. Okay, so let's actually skip to the part that's in bold. Okay? Okay, he says, what is the problem with Amalek? Amalek came, and they were able to have some kind of influence on Israel to start inspiring people to be pulled away from having faith in God. What is Vayizanev Becha? Im Ayudim Shenikaru Miyadu Zinev Kol Nechashalim Acharecha V'shamu V'ar Yoter. That's it. Now you got to look in. That's in Parshas, right? So, that what happened was, so you have to look at the hints when the Torah describes what happened with Amalek, and you see that they were really, you know, preying on the weak-minded, not just the weak, but the weak-minded, Do you ever see missionaries who target Jews? And if they're successful, there's a whole thing in Israel, people who are fighting missionaries, because there are missionaries in Israel who are trying to get weak-minded Jews. There are whether it's Christian, or there are organizations that try to save Jewish girls who have been caught under the spell of and been brought into Arab towns and married to Arab men, and they're stuck, they can't get out. Okay, now obviously some people make choices and they know exactly what they're doing, but some people, they're very vulnerable at the time when that happens, and so these organizations are trying to save them. So what does it mean? Now we can ask every question under the sun. How could anybody, after having experienced all the things which they experienced, how could they possibly be falling under the trap of Amalek? Well, we know what's happening in a few parshas. There's going to be a golden calf. Right? So we can ask the question all we want, but we can't put ourselves in the minds of these people. V'yeh perish v'yilachem Yisrael lo gamashmo milchemes tenufa. So the fact that they fight with Israel, but what's the fighting? Moshe, after Vayilachem Yisrael, after they fight with Israel, Moshe says, hey, Yoshua, it might be a good idea to go get some soldiers together and fight with them. Well, then it wasn't really a fight. It was more like Amalek routed whoever they attacked. So Vesuah Yaroi Luchto Vayilachem Yisrael. Moshe Vayishmakan Vayilachem Yisrael. El HaPerish Vayilachem Im Yisrael. It's not that they fought against Israel, they fought with Israel. Hainu im klal hayadus. Shirotza la'asir arbe anashim hayadus. It was a religious war. It was a religious battle. It was an ideological battle. V'zeh hu onesh sheyil Yisrael shenichnasu l'savek hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu m'ayim. If people are asking, is God among us? Amalek can say, you have questions? We got answers. We can tell you where your safety lies. Come join us. And that's the whole question. Who's worse? Not Lavan or Paro. You know, there's a famous, I mean, I don't know if it's a famous, there's a midrash in which all the enemies of the B'nai Yisrael, they want to do what they can. I mean, it's obviously it's a parable because it can't be referring to the B'nai Israel. But the idea is that each one says that the previous guy was a fool, right? So who's the first murderer in the Torah? Cain. Okay, but what did he do? He killed Hevel while his parents could still have children. So the next one says, and of course they have Chase. So the next one says, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to wait until they die. And that's what Esav says, right? Esav is, Yikrevu Yimei Evel Avi V'argah Sechi. When my father is dead and he can't have another kid, that's when I'm going to kill Yaakov. Okay? So who looks at that? I'm trying to remember. It was Paro. Paro looks at that and says, Esav, you're an idiot. Because you're waiting until Yaakov, until Yitzchak's dead. In the meantime, Yaakov has kids. So you want to kill Yaakov, too late. He already made a family. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to kill the kids when they're born. Okay? And so that's why Paro has the decree against the children. This is a midrash, and it goes on in that way. And then who's the next one? I don't remember if it's Amalek. Amalek says, "Yeah, but you're a fool because you only kill the boys and their girls." Bishvil nashim zidkanios nigalum mitzrayim. So you got to get all of them. That's what Amalek tries to do. They try to kill out everybody. And then Gog Magog says that Amalek was a fool because he didn't realize that they could fight back, whatever it is. I mean, that's the whole idea. But in that midrash, you see that Esav is compared to, what was it we just saw here? Right, it's a religious war. So it's actually not Lavan. I was thinking Lavan at the same time. Okay, whatever. Anyway, it still fits with what I'm trying to say. Israel is saying, is God with us? If God's not with you, then the ideas of Amalek can come in. But you don't skip to the next line, to the next pasuk. But Moshe Yoshua. Moshe says to Yoshua, "Go out and fight." Ratza Moshe Rabbeinu Laros Yisrael Koach Hashgachas Hashem Alehem. Gambali Neis Nigla. Why is Moshe sending Yoshua out to this battle if, in fact, Hashem could just wipe him out? So he wanted people to see without a revealed miracle. Al Kain Tzidir Milchama Zubederach Ateva. So he had Yoshua actually in the trenches fighting. And since Moshe was not, this was not exactly his thing, Al Kain Tzivas Yoshua. So Moshe was not the guy who's going to... Ironically, Moshe... I don't know if he does lead the people in battle, but we have a tradition that Moshe is the one who killed Og. Okay, now, it doesn't necessarily mean that the Midrash that describes how Moshe kills Og is in fact a Lemaisa... Maisa Shahaya, but it's probably more that it's the merits of Moshe that were able for him to defeat the merits of Og. But did Moshe actually kill him? I don't know. Anyway, so Bechar Lanu Anashim, Yehoshua is told to choose men, and who are these people? Giborim, Kederach Melchama, Kederach HaTeva. It should look like this is happening following the ways of natural warfare. Okay, and so Uve Targum Yonatan, he says, Elu Bale Pikudaya. He says that who are the people that Yehoshua is going to be taking out? Hainu Giborim B'Milchamta Shel Torah. Shem Uzgalim B'Yichud L'Milchama Tiv'Is. The people who are going to have the greatest merits on the battlefield are the biggest Talmidei Chachamim, because they have the most going for them in terms of Hashgachas Hashem, in terms of Hashem watching over them. Now, I don't know what Milchamta Shel Torah means at that point in time. we assume that the Matan Torah took place after this for a whole bunch of reasons. At least, first and foremost, because of the chronology and the order of the Torah, and how this, you know, is in Rephidim, and Sinai is Sinai. Okay, now Moshe continues and says to the people, "Anochini tzava roshi giva umateo elhim yadi," that the staff of God is going to be in my hand when I'm on the mountain, be'emes, or the hilltop. Be'emes lo yishtamesh bo'ozim ma'aseh b'mate klal. Moshe doesn't use the mate, the staff, at all. Aval yehodia liyoshua she'ei libo chazak melchama tivis. But he was in instructing and encouraging Yehoshua to be all over the idea that this is going to be a natural battle. Ki'aval gav shim chalil lo yekadai she'izgar b'Yisrael de melchama tivis. If chas v'shalom it happens that B'nai Yisrael are not going to be victorious, naturally. Basher ulai lo yishabdu levavam laviyim shabashmayim. Maybe they don't have the proper kavana towards heaven that God should watch over them. Kasher yivar lefanenu. Become makom lo yiblu l'shachas chas v'sham. But they're not all going to be destroyed. Kim oz yihei muchrach l'izgaber al yidei amateh v'hu neis nigla ki lo yitosh Hashem esamo. Okay, so he says that what's Moshe's mateh in his hand for? So we call a backup plan. Right in the Mei Meriva story, Moshe's told, go over and talk to the rock and take a stick. Take a stick. He's told to take a stick. So what's the stick there, according to the Netziv? It is backup. The Netziv's commentary on that story, by the way, is pretty amazing. In a nutshell, he says that Moshe's job was to teach the Bnei Yisrael how to pray for water when their supernatural existence in the land, which is what they need in order to get water, is no longer producing water. That's his pshat on what Moshe was supposed to do, and how Moshe did not do that opportunity. Anyway, Ella Disham Lo Itzlech Moshe La Asos B'Derech HaTeva. There, it was not successful in bringing out the water naturally. So if you want to compare this story and that story, so you see that Moshe was not successful in doing things naturally, whereas here, Yehoshua was successful. Okay, the next one just mentions how Moshe, Aaron, and Hur go up, and it goes to show that when you make a Tainus Tzibur, you should have... a base in there, and that's what we get from Pasuk Yud. Ksov Zozikaron Basefer. Okay, this is really important. Ksov Zozikaron Basefer. It's worth going through this whole thing. So if you remember the Pasuk, towards the very end of the Parsha, says you have to write this down and put it into the ears of Yoshua. What's the obvious question? Ksov Zozikaron Basefer. Why do you have to say, write it down, if it's written down? Why do you have to say, remember what's in the Torah? It's in the Torah.
It's there.
It's there, right? That's the Netziv's question. Masha omer lo kimacho imcha, ezech amalek, you have to tichtov a sefer, that I'm going to erase amalek, you have to write it down. V'gam v'sim b'osnei Yehoshua. Zeh, he says, and put it in Yehoshua's ears, you're writing it in the Torah. Zeh, v'yanira u'myutar, shrekol d'var Hashem l'moshe, nechtov a sefer Torah. Gam b'li d'var Hashem, shechtov l'zikaron. Hey, Moshe, you have to write down the Torah. Write it down. So I have to tell you, write it down as a zikaron? And also putting Yeshua's ears. I mean, you're giving it to Yeshua. You're giving the Torah to him. He says, first you need to understand the main thrust of this idea. I'm going to erase the memory of Amalek. If it's referring to the kingdom of Amalek, eventually it comes a time. Can anybody identify an Amalekite today? You can. No, you can't. Okay. You can't. You can't. So why do we still have this mitzvah to remember? I mean, it's kind of crazy. There's no Amalekite. So maybe there's a few Amalekites. Maybe. If they knew how to trace their genealogy back, then we could say, we can absolutely identify them as Amalekites. But, you know, who cares? What, a couple of schnooks? What are they going to do to the Bnei Yisrael? And if the whole point is to forget them, well, once you put it into the Torah, Shari, a Torah nitzchis, v'imiz karto. The Torah remembers the person, or remembers the nation. So the idea that you're going to forget it, I mean, if it hadn't been written in the Torah, guess what? We would have forgotten. Right? We would have forgotten. So if you have to tell us, don't forget. So, fine, it's in the Torah enough. That's enough. Al-Kain, a covenant to das Amalek ve'olam. It's about Amalek's, how would you call it, imprint?
Role.
What?
His role.
His role. The zebarur shelo luchinam isgara Amalek in Yisrael. That it's not just haphazard that Amalek is in conflict with Yisrael. Asher believes suffik lo na'alam imenu ki lo b'nei kel yuchal lo. That he's never really gone because we can't easily get rid of him. Balomis Aber Al Riv Lo Lo. He's fighting over a fight which is not his. El Mishum Sharesh's Goyim Amalek is Barbilum Bay Sophia or Ruach HaKodesh. It's because the first nation is Amalek, as Bilam noted. Galkain in a Kamanashi he Hauma Hayotem Slachas Mucharas Bilam. It's not that Amalek is a crazy successful and wealthy and happy nation. Amalek was always the dregs of society. And just a tiny nation. Just as Amraphel and his buddies, and there's a whole Torah about how Amraphel, how they fought against Sodom and captured Lot for one purpose, to lure Abram out of his lair, in order for them to be able to kill him. Okay, so those guys, what's the whole point? That they have a fight with Abraham, with one person. Why? Because of his ideology. Commotion is barred, medio, kamikros, gracious. They knew that Abraham was the sign of justice. To bring down God's divine, you know, watching over based on people's deeds. So, from the time that Israel left Egypt and they were ready to receive the Torah, things were worse for the nations of the world. Because look at what Am Yisrael is ready for, and look at what you guys are ready for. Right, this is the number one hatred in the world. And what's the number one hatred? Anti-Semitism. And why is it? What's the main reason for anti-Semitism? Judaism. That's it. It's the main reason. Why? Because you are Jews and you're different and you preach morality and we hate that you preach morality. Hashem promised that there's going to be a time when you have to wipe out Amalek. That, you know, his role. What is it that Amalek stands for? How do you want to define that? Anarchy? Not anarchy. Just, you know, absolute freedom. No rules. Maybe that is anarchy. And our goal is that Hashem should be king over all of the world. And so therefore, the idea that you can just do whatever you want is not really good for the non-Jews who just want to do whatever they want. Certainly Amalek. And that's, you know, when it is that Hashem will be king over the world is in the Messianic era. I like this very much. He says, when Hashem tells Moshe, write this memory down. It's like a person who's telling his kid a story, right, to tell him to warm his heart, etc. And when he gets to a point that he's telling his kids something, but he wants to emphasize and highlight that point, right, he's in the middle of talking, and what does he say? Oh, listen carefully, Yankee. Listen, I want you to remember this, what I'm about to tell you. But I'm listening. Like, what do you mean, listen to this? Listen to this one. This one's very important. Even though he wants him, of course, to be listening to everything, he'll emphasize something which is really important. So of course, we're supposed to know all the Torah. But from the fact that God says to Moshe, write this one down, this memory, that there's a lot more to meets the eye than in this one. We have to remember that. Because the ultimate goal is that God's honor should fill the world. And we should believe, and we should believe that this time will indeed come. And that is Mashiach era. Zamar, oh, and Hashem, v'simbios ne Yoshua. So Hashem continues and says, put it in Yoshua's ears. Hu ha-gadas devar soj v'zeh. It's like, you know, this teaching over Masorah. V'huz man ha-keit shegil li'azno. And he gave him the end of time. V'amuvan shegam hu yigaleh mi sharoi l'kach. And so it's understood that that will be revealed to the person who is worthy of it. Midor dor. So what does it mean that this is, that I'm going to wipe them out? It's a war against Amalek generation and generation. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen right now. Ela midor dor hakodem, from previous generations. I know we shash about Avram Avinu, but olam mechel orid eshchin elamata beashkach echlal isnotzesas v'lochom im koach ateva lefi ador. So in other words, what he's saying is that this battle against Amalek, it's not just a battle of a physical fight that's going to take place on a battlefield, but it is an ideological battle, and that has been around since the dawn of Avram Avinu's ethical monotheism, and that is the battle. It doesn't matter that it's Amalek and he's maybe Esau's grandson, etc., but that there is a group that will want. By the way, Amaleki are mentioned, I think. Are Amaleki mentioned in Parshas Lech Lecha?
Yes,
Stay Amaleki. Right, Stay Amaleki. So it's Hashem. But the point is that mentioning Amalek in the context of Avram just goes to show that is a fight that the Nesiv is mentioning, which is an ideological one more than anything else. And of course, his hopes that in Yemos HaMashiach they should come to Meherav Yameinu, that this will come to an end, but it's a reminder of what it is that we're up against. Forget about the physical. We're all aware and familiar with the physical. Thank God we live in a land in which it's not as big of a threat as it was in other places. But we all know what's been happening the last year, and we hope that will turn around. But the ideological battle is always on. And lo aleinu, too many of us are being lost and we're losing it. But thank God many of us are not losing it, and we're staying strong, and we should continue to have the merit to stay strong and win the ideological battle of Am Yisrael against Amalek.